I'll call this meeting to order and welcome and thank you all for coming out. It's almost spring. Not as warm as Texas was, but almost spring. I would like to recognize that we meet on unceded Willistoqua territory and that we're in the process of working with our First Nations communities again on our yearly conversations around, what's the word?
Enhancement.
Enhancement. Right. Thank you.
You're good.
She is very good. I made reference to Texas. I attended the American National School Board Association meeting in San Antonio last week or the week before, but in the process of getting back, something happened to my ears in the plane, so I don't always hear, but I think I lost some gray cells as well with that, so I will forget more things.
All those who agree?
Consent items, we have the agenda. Are there, I would like to make one change to the agenda, and that's under Superintendent Monitoring Reports, ASD WGP 10 will remove from the agenda tonight and come back to that when the Policy Committee has had an opportunity to look at it. And Jane?
I'd like to know if it would be all right to change the order of the two presentations so that the Leo Hayes PSSC was ahead of the schools, the Oromocto School.
Are you all right with that, Mr. Tracy?
Whatever you guys decide.
Okay. Gives you more time to fix whatever your problem is over there.
Okay. It's meshing new technology with older.
Okay. Not working
so well.
Those old whiteboards, I saw antiquated when I was a kid.
Really?
Get at the top, yeah. Okay, so with those two changes, are you fine with the agenda as it stands? Thank you, then that would be approved by consent. And the minutes of the March 22nd meeting, you had an opportunity to look at. Which was actually held on March 29th.
Okay. Give or take a week.
Yeah, I remember that, due to weather. Yes, so do we have any issues with the minutes? Seeing none, then those minutes approved as well by consent. Under correspondence, we have a letter that will go up on the portal and you'll be able to have a conversation if you need to about it from the minister, just to let you know that he's acknowledged our request coming from a motion from the February 22nd meeting that the province adopt an LGBTQ2S policy. And that will be available for the May meeting to discuss. Is there something else? Under correspondence. So that's the outgoing correspondence. Yeah, we were just doing incoming. under outgoing correspondence, I prepared a letter to go to the Minister of Education because our First Nations representative, I'm sorry to announce that the First Nations representative has had to resign. So I have written to the Minister and asked him to declare that seat vacant, and we will get right on having him appoint someone else to sit in that seat. Is that it? Anything else, Mark, that you can remember that we've forgotten? Thank you. So, under new business, are you ready?
Can I introduce
yes.
the topic?
Oh, before you do that, would you please introduce the staff? I would like to thank the staff that are present for being here.
So I noticed Gina came in and sat in the corner. So Gina Dunnett, who is the director of schools in the Oromocto Center. We have Shelley McLeod, who's our director of HR, sitting at the wall. And the two gentlemen standing up, sort of well. And Wayne Annis is sitting, and he's the director of schools in the Fredericton area, and Sean Tracy is our director of finance and administration. And I believe that's it.
Okay. Are you going to need the overhead?
Yes.
Okay. So Jane will introduce.
Yeah, so in light of the upcoming May capital construction projects and the fact that the Leo Hayes High School tech wing has been on our number one priority last year, and we have a new kind of situation coming up in May where we have to renew that list. The PSSC at Leo Hayes High, who have been very involved in questioning where this is and actively pursuing this, have asked to be able to speak tonight at the deck. So Kimberly and George, who are the co-chairs of the PSSC at Leo Hayes, have brought along a couple of students over there, and I believe they're going to take the floor.
My name is Tyler Jeffries. I'm a student at Leo Hayes High School in grade 11. And I'm here today to talk to everyone about the lack of trades classes offered at Leo Hayes High School. Skills such as mill and cabinet work, culinary tech, automotive, and many others are all vocational courses that are necessary for a lot of demand jobs in our society. There are many courses I would like to take, but I'm unable to because our school does not offer them. There are two trades courses offered at our school, mill and cabinet work and culinary tech. Over 200 trades exist, but Leo Hayes only offers training in two. These trades take up a large portion of our jobs in New Brunswick, and jobs that people just like me and Tally would like to pursue, but do not have the opportunity to be exposed to these jobs and trades prior to post-secondary. I feel a lot of students at our school would benefit from and be interested in pursuing careers in trades if more courses were offered at Leo Hayes High School. Students like me and Tally are interested in taking courses such as welding, we have to come to Leo Hayes, or FHS, sorry. We have to come here to FHS and take a bus here and back, and you must come for two periods, when the course would only take you one. The problem with this is that they have two courses that you're allowed to take at FHS, and they only accept 20 students from Leo Hayes. Another problem with that is that there's a rotation, so they only do two courses 1 year, next year they do a different two, and then there's a third year where they do a different two, and then they go back to the first one where they do that. So these courses, you can only take them in grade 11 and 12. So you could, if I wanted to do welding, I might be on the wrong rotation, and I might never get to do welding. I recently had the opportunity to participate in the Skills Canada MB competition at Moncton High School. Students competed in, I want to say, 10 different trades at that school, and Leo Hayes only sent two students, one from Mill and Cab, which was what I was a part of, and Culinary Tech, which are the only two trades that we have offered at the school. Which brings up another point. Moncton High School has a humongous trades wing, with lots of different automotive welding, electrical, wood chop, big wood chop. They have lots of different rooms for all kinds of stuff. Students at that school have a much larger opportunity to pursue these different careers and figure out what they want to pursue as a career. For me, going there was a positive learning experience that allowed me to demonstrate the skills I learned in class and help me develop time management and problem solving skills. Expanding the trades wing of Leo Hayes High School would provide more students with valuable learning opportunities and the practical skills needed for future employment. Thank you for your time.
Before the meeting began, you were telling us about your experience. Maybe if you could just tell them a little bit of the predicament that you're in as a grade 11.
You need to speak up.
So I chose welding for next year and for grade 12 year. And I don't know if I'm going to get into it. I don't know if I'm going to get into it until next year. Like, I think it's the beginning of grade 12 that I know. And I also have to take another course that I may not want to do. I actually don't even know what it is, but I chose it anyway. But yeah. And that's my situation.
Could I just do you, are you aware if the welding course that you applied for is one of the courses that has 40 applicants that only takes 20 students?
Yeah.
Is that one of them? Yeah. So today, there are 40 applicants for that course and they only take 20.
Okay. For something that's all employable.
Yeah, so that's only 20.
For something that's all employable.
Yeah. For Leo Hayes students at FHS. Thank you. I think you've, I don't know if you've taken courses in public speaking, but you're amazing.
Yes.
Can I just follow up with a couple things? So,
sure. Do you want to have questions now or after you're done?
Oh, sure. After I'm done. I'm George Long. I'm the co-chair of the PSSC. We're looking at talking to the school. They said on average it's about 140 students every year that don't get into the tech course that they're applying for. Right? And we've been on the list for a number of years. Think back 4 years, it's like 560 students. And you know, like, it's hard to get a job. You have ones at welding and things you want to get into, and you know, it adds up. And we look at the cost. I think in the E&Y report it was, you know, $1.9 million. It's not $25-$30 million here. 1.9. And there's a private host that's sold up by me for a minute. We're not talking big bucks here, right? So anyway, I think, and there's the added benefit when you look at Leo, because it's a bit overcrowded. You had a separate tech wing that would carry these things. It alleviates a bit of the space for regular classes. So, anything you'd like to say?
No, that's exactly.
So that's kind of it. We certainly want it on the list again. And it's, you look at the kids and you say, geez, it's tough to get a job now. You think 140 like them are not going to get in. Right, and they're employable skills, right? Not everybody's going to be an engineer. That's what we're trying to get that point across, right? My kid's one, like she's, you know. So it's nice to have those options, right? So please consider putting it as a priority on your list. Thanks very much.
Does anyone have any questions for the students or the chairs, Mark?
Congrats to the students. It's not easy to speak like that, and you just did a great job. I'd like to preface anything I say going on this subject to say that I hope any questions or statements I or anyone else makes, for that matter, who knows, not as an attack, but as a challenge. Because for us as a district, for me as a council member, we want capital money next year. So do we want it for Leo Hayes? Well, it's number one, so of course we do. But do we want it, period? Yes. So as I go into May, there, and again, remember, take everything I say as a challenge, not in fed lights of fire, it needs to, okay? So, so when I look at it, I say, okay, it's been on for a couple of years. While there may be concern and talk, and I mean, my fellow counselor, Jane, talked about, you know, there's been discussion and movement. I haven't seen it at this table, and so I'm very glad that you're here, as far as the school. Your MLA, I don't know where he's at, but these are all factors in us first getting money, second getting money for our projects. So it's important to have as many people on side and to create a sense of need so that we get the money. You know, and coincidentally, Ernst & Young, which was mentioned, actually recommended not going ahead with that project. So the
What they recommended was that it's cheaper to bus some kids over here.
Right.
Which it is.
Right.
But to what end?
And we understand.
But how many get in over here?
Right.
So that doesn't meet the need of the courses, right?
Right.
So they say, don't build it, but that doesn't meet the need.
So you guys have a very important message. I guess I'm wondering how loud it is, right? And that's something we're helping with. Obviously, we, despite the recommendation, made that number one, but we have a number of other projects. So with May, I don't know what you have in mind, what's coming, but it is an important discussion, and ultimately, when we get money from one project, we can move on to the next, you know. So I have to think of that personally. Obviously it's staying on the list. I think what you really want, what you're asking, is that it stays number one.
That's what we're at.
So, you know, look at who's involved. Look at who makes the decisions. There's a decision based on need, and there is a political side. That's just the way it is.
For sure.
And we're competing. I think we have a good case. We're competing on the provincial level for the $80 million for infrastructure. So this may make the most sense to us because we're connected to it, but how does it compete on a provincial level? Those are things we got to think of. So besides data, which I think we have a good data, I think these students did well in showing the situation. You know, a voice is important, the community voice, the political involvement. So... Well, and to be honest, if I think a squeakier wheel, a different wheel would be squeakier or a louder voice, I'm going to recommend we switch projects.
Over what you think is like the best need for the student.
So every project we have will benefit students incredibly, right? So.
Sorry to interrupt, but
yeah,
this one particular project. This one particular request, though,
okay.
It's something that I think can be a more immediate impact. When you build a school, it takes years, 5-8 years if you're lucky, because there's a whole bunch of involved in terms of buying and drawings and all that kind of stuff. But this here particular project, that's something that I think that really, I mean, that can be done within maybe not that particular year, but something that can be done within 1 year.
Yep.
Just because of the simplicity of it.
Mm-hmm.
And I understand that I understand what you're saying is to get people involved and get people to put pressure.
Well, if you're MLA, who's
yes.
a prominent MLA, I mean, because for us, we can have the most important project, and everything you said is accurate. I agree. If the government's not going to put their money where the story is, we're going to. I would put it where something else.
But the fact of the matter is, you guys have to make a decision in May.
Yep.
And a new government, whether it be an incumbent, or not, the fact of the matter is, they aren't going to be there until September. So we're asking you to keep that as number one priority with, I think, immediate impact.
And bang for buck, too. I guess if you look at it for student, like an eligible student over there, I mean, they may be going to, smaller schools and on their way up, but a lot of them flow through there, and, oh my gosh, for the amount of money for the students, that's, having another number of them getting through these courses
right.
and getting employed.
So this is a good story, and this dialogue is very good, and I'm glad we're having it. The story publicly needs to expand, because this is a small room, and it needs to get louder. So that's my challenge, to just say, you know, I don't say convince me because I'm convinced, but convince me. Pretend I'm not. Pretend we're not. And pretend Fredericton's not. And the department's not. And just nail us. You know, we'd like to get the money. That's my goal.
Get those young men out there with full horns.
Yeah, get your friend.
Faith, you have a question. Excuse me for my ignorance, but when I joined the council, I was just on the tail end of the study for the Leo Hayes. So the one question I want to ask is, if during the process, if you have done up your stats, and if you have gone to any big companies or big organizations in the province that hire a lot of welders and go to them and show them, have you had a conversation with any of those people?
Well, I've talked to a few people in unions and whatnot.
Yeah.
A lot of them have given up on government.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them, the few people that I've talked to, what they've done is, if they've had a young person come to them and say, look, I'm interested in a career in electrical work, then they've taken them under their wing on their own. There is a demand for them. I know I spoke to somebody from Eastern College, and they told me, we can't get enough IT students doing all kinds of things. We have companies coming to us looking for more IT students. We have kids coming into the school system, or that are in the school system, and they're trying to come to the college so that they can get a certificate or diploma or what have you. But meanwhile, industry is just snatching them up. They've given up the Eastern College. They're not doing any kind of trades. However, if you go to MBCC, they are. And they have, they've done some restructuring this year, like since January. They've done a reorg, if you will. And there is a demand in welding is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Built like home construction, and that seems to be quite popular too. And but they can't get the kids. If the kids were exposed to it, what some of these people in these different sectors have told me, if kids were exposed to it, then they might take an interest in post-secondary education in that particular field. But the problem is there's not many kids that are exposed to it. So industry's saying, yeah, we want this.
Yeah.
You have people like the Irvings down in St. John who have a pilot project. It's a 3-year pilot project, and they're helping out students down there to take a welding program, but they can also put them right to work. In the shipyard. We don't have a shipyard here.
No.
But there is a demand for welding. I don't know if that answers your...
Not quite, but I know what you're saying.
But a member of the PSSC has actually gone out into the community on the north side of Fredericton and talked to various businesses about the demand, correct?
Yeah.
And so, yes, there has been lots of that going on. Yeah.
Some of them have just got tired of waiting for somebody to come out of college. And just like, you know, it's like, oh, they have a young person who maybe did a summer job with them. It's like, you know, you're really good at building. Like, I'll take you under my wing. I'll show you the ropes. Or you're really good at masonry. I'll show you the ropes. Because there's not, you know, that's something really specific.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that some industry people that I've talked to, that's what they've told me. But there's another woman on our PSSC, and she's talked to a fair number of unions and whatnot. And some of them, they're not sure, you know, that they have support from education.
Any other questions?
Thank
no? Thank you very much. And thank you.
Yes.
So next on our list, we have Kevin Doucette here to present the Ernst & Young study on the town of Oromocto schools. And Sean, did you want to do anything in by way of introduction, or?
So, as our chairperson said tonight, we have Kevin Doucette here. He is with Ernst & Young, and he has a brief presentation for council on the options. options for the town of Ormaco as far as the organization of the schools that are presently there. So he's going to come up and take you through the presentation. If you have some questions, you know, he's done, by all means, feel free to ask him.
Call those kids back to
we found like a young technician out here and he said not so much.
Some of the other schools that may be affected is Burton Elementary, which is a K-2, which eventually feeds into the system. Gagetown, which is K-8. Although it's K-8 and things, Gagetown, French immersion, comes into Ormaco. Lincoln Elementary, K-5, but some of the Lincoln kids come in at 6-8 and for French immersion. And then you have Gary, which is K-5, and a few French immersion from Sunbury West. So those are schools that could be affected. So basically all they asked is, they weren't looking for any recommendations, but this is just for planning. So it's, look at the different configurations and let's see what happens when you do that. And from there, that'll give us some data to make some decisions on how we'd look to go forward. So the first scenario was to close all six and build two new K-5s and one 6-8. So close six, build three. The second scenario was kind of go along the lines we did in the Woodstock area. Close all the schools and build two K-8s. So that would close six, build two K-8s. Third scenario is the same as the second scenario. It says maybe we should consider doing three K-8s. And what would that do? Just to distribute the numbers. So exactly the same thing, close six, build three new K-8s. The fourth scenario is said, what happens if we try to do some midlife upgrade on one of our summer existing infrastructure and build some new? So it'll make it a little cheaper, but we'll try and reuse some of our buildings.
Kevin, can I interrupt you for just
sure.
a moment? I just wanted to say that we will post this report on the district website so that you don't have to worry about taking pictures or scribbling down notes.
When will you post it?
As soon as he's done.
Yeah.
So anyway, therefore, what you're looking at there is you're basically looking at closing five, building two new, and refitting one other one. So it's slightly different than the other ones. You're kind of just trying to use some existing infrastructure. And then the final one is, well, some of the area may like the way the setup is now, the K-2, 3-5, 6-8. So let's look and see in that scenario. We can close six, build three, but in a different configuration that matches the one. So that's the three types of the five scenarios that we come up with, basically rearranging all the things. So then the last part is we were asked to look at the census and do some projections to see what happens going forward with the student population. And
And what we saw is that not as large as you see in the Fredericton area, but there is some growth coming in the preschool. So, and then when you look at the elementary ages are higher than what you have in middle school now. So there's a natural wave of students coming, provided people don't move out. So we are going to see some growth. And the other thing that will cause some growth, too, is the change in French immersion. Going back from grade 3 to grade 1, you'll see more rural students coming into schools. Because you actually have two schools with grade 1 and grade 2 French immersion now, so that's four grades, getting some extra students from the rural schools that you didn't have before when you had it at the grade 3 entry point. So that said, basically when we're looking at the summary of each scenario. And the first one, as I mentioned, was the 2K to 5s and the 1-6-8. So what you're looking at is going forward 10 years. You'll see that, of course, the numbers are small, but you'll be able to see them when you read the monthly report. But basically, you look at combining Assiniboine Avenue and Hubbard's Avenue into 1K to 5, and you're looking at a school about 614 10 years from now, which is higher than the recommended upper limit of 500 per K to 5. But there is schools in the province that have that many students in that range, so you're not out of the realm of what existing schools, although you're out of the range. Same thing for Gesner and Summerhill. It'd be roughly the same at 603. Again, there are some comparables. And the combined middle school would be about 759. And again, you could just look down the road, George Street Middle School, that's over 700. So there are some comparables, although you're over the 700 limit they typically try to recommend you not to do. When you're looking at this, the interesting to note is you're going to have about 80% utilization, but you're going to have an increase of square meters. And what's causing that is the old standard doesn't have the same requirements as the new standard. So, for instance, when you look at middle school sizing of classrooms, for instance, they're 20 square meters smaller than they would be nowadays. This gym is sized at 380, it'd be 591 in a modern school. So these type of things, the cafeteria, science labs, when you add that all up, you're actually going to increase the footprint even though you're closing more schools, because you'll have that space in the new schools that's not in the old schools. That being said, you're going to avoid $7.3 million deferred maintenance by closing the schools, and you'd be in the range of almost $80 million to build the three. Operationally, excluding staffing, it's going to be about a wash because of the efficiencies. So what we did is we compared operational costs of similar new schools of that size in the province within the ASD West to the old operating costs. So it's basically a wash. So if you're looking at this scenario, you'd have slightly bigger schools than recommended, but there are schools in the province in that size. Scenario 2 had the 2K-8s. This one probably isn't as feasible as the other one when you start looking at the numbers, because you're up almost to 1,000 students. And when you say, is there any comparables in the province? No. So usually we don't do one-ups, so it's probably not a very viable scenario, but these are the results. And that's what says no. And again, because you're building, you're not creating as much space, it's a little less. You get 2,890, and you'd actually have an operational savings of 21,000, excluding staffing. So, but at the cost is, depending geologically, you have a lot of students in the school, so it's really too big. This one turned into scenario 3A. And what happened with this is we said, okay, that other one has the two really big zones. Let's look at 3K-8s. So what we said is, we sat down and did a couple of scenarios of drawing new school boundaries. Because with the 3K-8s, you actually have to separate the students into zones. Right now, all the schools mix and they're across the students the way that it feeds. This one will prevent that. So in the draft boundary that we did, we had this, what we call the Ormocto West, which is west of the highway, and the rest of Gunnis. That would be one school. and then we called the other one Remarkable Central, which is basically a remarkable town in the 6 to 8 from Lincoln, and that went to the Board Road. And then we called the other school a rural school, which would be the Burton, and your 6 to 8 from here and down that way. So that's why it ends up being smaller, because a lot of public students are in town, but you still have the segregation. So when you do the sizings of that, you end up with 726 for one and 761 for another. So now you're not in that 1,000 range. You're down in the upper range of where you know the schools are in the province. Again, it's above the recommended 650 for a K-8, but we do have some schools of 700 in the province. So if you decide to go that route, that would be the case. And then you have the Burton School at 469. The other thing you'll note here too is we planned on having French immersion, early French immersion at all three schools. When we did the projections, it looks like there would be enough, so the Burton students wouldn't have to no longer come into Remarkable even for French immersion. And to spread the students out, one thing I didn't like but had to be done was late French immersion was in the rural school. So if you were deciding to take 6 to 8 French immersion, you'd have to go to the rural school. But that's only because of spacing, and it's not, it wouldn't be that far away. What you see here, though, is because we're building all these middle school programs in three different schools, you'll see it's gone a lot bigger now in the extra space that you're creating. And you can see that one of them wouldn't be as full. And that's because you're spreading your French immersion out over three schools instead of over two. But in the end, you end up in that range with a half-decent-sized students and an increase of about 80K annually, excluding staff. The other thing to note is we didn't have an unlimited budget to run thousands of iterations of boundaries. You can still run some boundary iterations and then you make some adjustments. Like one person mentioned, maybe moving some more students to Lincoln and another meeting that had before. So that could be a possibility. 3B was, if we're going to put a K-8 in the Burton area, why would we keep a K-2 school? So someone just said, what would be the option? This is, we amalgamated Burton with the K-8 population. And what we found was that minimum effect on the cost. So you're only looking at 0.8 million more. And the deferred maintenance at Burton right now is $500,000. So 60% of the cost of adding them in would be covered by getting rid of deferred liability maintenance that you could be doing. It only increases the number of classrooms by 2 to include them. And by doing this, they would just go to one school now from K-8 instead of have to switch all these other places. So it matters that way. And operationally, because you're limiting more space, you're actually going to save $13,000 more annually by doing that, excluding staff. So in that case, you're building 3 and removing 7. So it's removing the most. Scenario 4 was building 2 new K-5s and using one of the middle schools and doing a midlife upgrade on it. So a couple things on that. You'll see that the numbers are high again. The K-5, 614, 603, 759. The cost to add onto the school is 68% of the cost of the new building. So basically, you're over the 50% threshold, and typically you don't add onto buildings when you get that high. The other thing that, I don't have a picture of it here, but when you look at the properties of the two middle schools, there's very little room to add on to them. One of them has the hospital behind them, the turf field. And then you go to the other one, there's actually a splash park there and another field and a community center to fly in. So really not much space to, so it kind of eliminates the thing when you look at it in the end, the different things. And the final scenario I was asked to look at was what would be involved if we did the K-2, the 3-5, and the 6-8. Now the numbers are, again, 590, 627, and 759. When you look for comparables in the province, there are none. There's only a few K-2 schools in the province, and of course most of them are here, with the largest ones being here, and we're talking about doubling the size of them. So there's no comparable to match with these things. The other thing that happens that's interesting is you'll remember most of the other scenarios had 80% to 70% utilization. This scenario has 90% utilization. And what happens there is the school sizings is becoming because you're having all the students in the same grades in the same thing, and you end up packing them in like sardines, which drives up your utilization. So in order to spread them out, you'd have to start adding on classrooms, which then you're in negotiations with the project team because they're saying, you know, there's standards as to why you get them. So even if you look at the K to 2, you're looking at 97% utilization. In order to drive that away down, you have to on many classrooms, which drives your costs up. Anything else with that? Just because you're compacting everything, they actually have 34,000 annual savings. So that's because you just compact everything down. The minute you start putting back on classrooms to get that utilization down, that'll go away pretty quick. I guess that's it for that. And the final thing is, if you select any of these scenarios or decide to look at another one, there's a few other things you need to consider. The first one is that the middle schools have some a maintenance shop in Ridgeview, and you have an IT, district IT, at Harold Peterson. Those aren't in the planning guidelines right now, so you need to find space for those. And the final thing to consider is that your implementation. How do you want to do this? So if you did decide to go with it, it's a lot of money. You're talking 70 to 80 million over time. So how do you do it? Do you do it phased? So when you're looking at the earlier solutions, you know, when you do Assiniboine with Hubbard Avenue, that's an amalgamation. The other ones can pump. But if you start going with the KD8 scenario and redrawing the boundaries, then you get to say, how does that affect the operations of the schools that stay open as you phase them in? Because you may end up moving students from one school to another temporarily. Because you, in the KD8 scenario, you're actually taking students from every school versus the other scenarios where you amalgamate. That's the difference. It does make a difference if you select the K to 8 versus going with the K to 5 scenario. It's got to be, how are we going to implement this? So, the final consideration. And that's the highlighted version of the presentation. Do you have any questions?
Mark.
Have you asked the government if we could have $80 million?
No.
No. Very good. Very good presentation.
But in regards to your 80 million, as you said, things go on, and everyone puts in their dollar values, mm-hmm. and that's why you can say, well, you know, we're looking at the upper edge of the 750, for instance. You could say maybe we want to go with the fourth school. Now you're adding in another $20 million. You'll lower your utilization, but now your business plan may not be as strong as now you're asking for 100 million and trying to get four schools over 4 years. So it's exactly what you're saying. It's how do we get the best to get it?
Just one more, if I may.
You may.
So these numbers, in terms of dollars anyway, obviously these numbers are based on today. These dollars, the 76 million is based on today's...
Correct. Like right. Putting in for capital for now. So it's not thinking 10 years from now.
So capital for now, the deferred maintenance, that's the current number.
Current number, which would go up over time, as you know.
So I know you had mentioned when we spoke before, the deferred maintenance, these are buildings are 60 almost, they're approaching 60 years old.
Right.
Is there anything you can share in terms of, does the cost go up even more because the deferred maintenance is on older buildings? Like, we know what we need done over the next 10 years, I'd say, but the buildings are getting older, right?
That's right. So it's just like anything, there's depreciation, we'll call it, of assets. And there's actually standards out there. So, for instance, a roof would be 20, 25 years. Everyone knows that at home. You get 20-year shingles or stuff like that. So when you start getting up into the 75 to 80-year range, that's when you start seeing more significant depreciation, we'll call it, as in you need to do more major structural repairs, and then bigger costs start coming in. So then you're not just going to put the shingles down. You're going to have to do a certain percentage of your roof, let's say, which escalates the cost. Or you might have to fix foundations. For instance, there is some differential settlement in schools, which is known at this time. It's been there a while, and it's being maintained. But it's just, over time, it gets worse, right? So you're right. There, you know, in the next 20 years, that in, you know, we're talking a 10-year horizon for planning. So, you know, you're getting close to adding on. start getting more significant for me.
We've seen the results of that with just repairing some of our elementary schools already, the disruption it causes and the amount of work that goes into
fixing
small structures.
Excuse me. I'm sorry, I have to ask you to wait for public comment.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It's okay. It's an interesting topic.
Sorry.
That's why.
Is there any other questions?
Yeah. Sean, I know you weren't around. Have you had lots of time to process this? Yeah.
It's a lot of numbers, but basically in the end, just trying to tell you, is like, give you some different options of, this is what would happen under these particular scenarios. Then you have to decide, do we want to actually ask for a school of 1,000 kids, which there's none in the province? You submit that, and that'll be the first thing they look at as the standard is typically 700 for a middle school, and you're submitting 1,000. So that may not meet a certain criteria when it's scored, in your business plan. So that's why I say in that scenario, probably not viable. So some of the other ones, they're on the high end, but we do have schools that are comparable.
Just a question educationally, maybe for our superintendent, Madam Chair, and that is, with all the scenarios presented, there's a difference between a K-2, a 3-5, even a K-5 versus a K-8, and maybe it's a two-part question in terms of educationally, administratively, what's a good scenario? We don't know what will be the choices and funding at the end of the day, but what's a good configuration? And have we looked at all at staffing savings with those configurations? Education, quality education, of course, always being number one, but, any savings from staff?
To answer part two of your question about have we investigated staffing and if there's savings, no, we haven't. It wasn't part of what we asked of Ernst & Young, nor have we taken the opportunity to investigate that. So the answer would be no. The other question around scenarios or configurations, what they all have benefits to them, like a K-2, a 3-5, a K-5. We can dig into what it would look like and what are the benefits. I like the idea of having a K-8 configuration just because it gives you plenty of flexibility and allowing peers to work with peers or younger students. So there is some benefits to that. Size matters, right, as we don't want a school the size of 1,000 students because then it does get too big to manage. When you're in a K-2, a K-5, or a K-8, in a K-8 we can do learning groups where the building can be organized to make smaller families within a bigger family. But they all have benefits.
The thoughts of 500 snowsuits needing to go on within 5 minutes is just, not to mention noses and things like that.
And like you said, the compaction ratio, right? When you have the K-8, you spread it out, so you don't have all the smaller grades in one thing. And so, for instance, if you just have a K-2, there's only two grades that'll have French immersion. One, the K-8s don't. And that's why you get that 97% that I showed. Versus if you go K-8, it's spread out over three schools. We're planning on having three French immersion programs, which again, spreads your students out so you don't have the biggest class sizes. So that's a benefit.
Anyone else have any questions? Thank you, Kevin. Again, an extremely well done report and lots of fodder for thought for us.
Yeah, no, it's a lot to consider. So, yeah. All right, thank you very much.
Thank you.
I just want to comment before we move on that we have many things going on in our heads as we approach the next month. We have the thoughts of what are we doing with the South Side, with the previous Ernst & Young report and the recommendations coming from that, and our recognized need for a school in Hanwell, and what are we doing with Forest Hills and Liverpool, Street schools, what are we doing with the Northside study and the schools in the areas that need to be addressed there with Nacogdoches Memorial and McAdam Avenue, and add to that now considerations in Oromocto. There doesn't seem to be a lot of recognition of from the province of the population dealings that we have here. Our population is growing and is not in any foreseeable future going to shrink in the Fredericton-Oromocto areas. And so we're left with major questions and major decisions to make and priorities. And so Mark's point for the Leo Hayes people is well taken. That's a critical thing that needs to happen. But I'm not sure that it's being heard beyond the walls of this room and what are we going to do with that? So we have to consider not only where are our priorities going to be in terms of asking for new school construction or for additions, but also what are we going to do next year in terms of sustainability studies? Because we know that if we want to put schools together or take schools down, we have to do a study ahead of time. And each one of those studies requires a minimum of two meetings with a public meeting as the third. So we will have major decisions to make in May, and a lot that we've been thinking about all along, but a lot to put on our plates for the next month. That's just my spiel. School success stories. And I believe, Andy, you're number one.
Thank you, I am number one.
Yes.
And I didn't think I'd ever say that, but there we are.
Bristol Elementary School, thanks to an Arts Smart grant, the grade two students worked with a local artist on a project entitled BAM, Building a Mindset of Growth, Superheroes in Disguise. Over 12 afternoon sessions, they made personalized capes, self-portrait paintings, play superheroes, dog tag necklaces, word pop art, and character trait posters. Bristol Elementary School has invested in creating outdoor learning kits that are available to all classes and allows the teacher to take learning outside. The kits will promote hands-on learning of our environment and the role we play. Items used are magnifying glasses, bug nets, clipboards, tubular webbing, and binoculars.
Thank you. I want to go back to Bristol Elementary School and get a cape and be a superhero. Thank you. Nacowick. Miriam.
The Nacowick Elementary School is piloting a PBIS initiative in partnership with transportation, whereby bus drivers are distributing Katya cards to students on their bus who demonstrate appropriate behavior following safety rules and guidelines on the bus. Excuse me. Cards will then be placed on a bulletin board in the school entrance titled Star Riders. The robotics program is starting soon in grades 1 and 4, and the junior chef program currently has 12 students enrolled from grades 4 and 5, where students are enjoying cooking healthy snacks during the after-school program.
Thank you. Doaketown Elementary School partner with their local community library, logging contractor, and Masonic Lodge to provide Ride to Read, a reading program which encourages reading and physical activity to all our K-5 students. For each book they read at home, each child gets a ballot for a prize draw. The draw for four bicycles will take place in the spring. Each year, Doaketown Elementary School also receives 100 butterfly eggs that are distributed to all grade K-5 classrooms. Classes learn about their life cycle, how to care for them, and their impact on the earth. Once the butterflies have reached maturity, classes release them into nature. And that's exciting.
Leo Hayes High School. Leo Hayes High School are proud to have a June 2018 graduate who has won a Schulich undergraduate scholarship. You wondered how I was going to say that, didn't you? This student will be attending Queen's University in the fall to study in the study of science. Just to let you know what that is, There are 20 participating universities across Canada that award two scholarships each, only one nominee per high school from anywhere in Canada. So a total of 50 across Canada are accepted, and they're offered full ride scholarships provided they maintain. They have to apply for the scholarship and apply to the university. So there's one student from Leo Hayes who has been awarded this. The study is a STEM scholarship, science, technology, mathematics, and engineering. So that they have to be studying one of those four things. And on April 5th, a team of six students participated in a mathematics competition in Waterloo, Ontario. Leo Hayes was the only team east of Ottawa at the competition. There is no mention of how they did.
But one of their students got a scholarship.
Yeah, whatever one of their students has got a Schulich scholarship, yeah.
And Faith.
Cambridge Narrows Community School. Elementary students from Cambridge Narrows Community School, through weekly square dancing lessons, are reinforcing a number of curricular outcomes in various subject areas, and they're having fun while doing so. This opportunity has been made possible through ArtSmart funding, and willing volunteers from the Washtimoik Swingers Square Dance Club. The grade 7 and 8 classes have successfully grown a second crop of green hydroponically to contribute to their farm to school salad bar. Students have also solved a major pump and lighting issue that has resulted in their best crop yet. Thank you.
Awesome. Gessner Street Elementary School, the Gessner Street School Drama Troupe, recently performed their rendition of Aladdin at the District Drama Festival and garnered several awards. This is an amazing feat, as these students are ages 6 and 7, very young to be involved in a drama production of this scope. Also, Gessner Street Elementary School is involved in a nutrition partnership with Barker's Point Elementary School that has been recognized by the Premier of New Brunswick, and he was at the school for the announcement. Students are promoting healthy food choices through the development of a special section in their school library, and they are also starting the process of growing their own produce for the lunch program using a hydroponic system and a grow tower. I've seen it, it's pretty cool.
Guess we're ready with those hydroponics.
July 1st.
Thank you. So we're superintendent reports. I can't find the agenda. Thank you. School culture. So I will remind council members that they have a copy of the report with our first go round of review, so you have a spot on your report to make your decisions based on whether the interpretations were reasonable and so on. So you have that in front of you, ready to go.
Okay, so this is ER 2.2 school culture. The policy calls for the superintendent to create a positive learning and working environment that is inclusive and supportive to both students and staff members. And we refer to culture as the way staff members work together and their collective set of beliefs, values, and assumptions, which impacts their own behavior. We believe that a positive culture will promote student achievement and staff achievement. We are tracking this work currently through our district positive learning and working environment plans, at which we are focusing on how to create that positive learning environment in a school, and we are doing that work within our own district environments as well, not just focusing on schools, but we're focusing on ourselves. And in the schools, we are supporting with student connectedness, because we believe that if students have somebody that they can connect to in the building, they will be more likely to feel comfortable within that building. We also have a focus on student voice in our school improvement or our district improvement plan. So just two items that we happen to focus on around school culture. district staff comes together on a regular basis to review and monitor these two plans. And schools also complete a school improvement plan and a school-based district or school-based plan for their school environment. And both of these plans are provided to the district on an annual basis. One of the areas that you have asked to highlight is around celebrating success. You also talk about partnerships and you also talk about student voice, but one of the actions that we've taken on around celebrating success is our director of communication on a regular basis now reaches out to schools to talk about events and initiatives that are going on in their building to celebrate, and those stories are placed on their website. And it's a revolving door, so to speak, so it's updated on a regular basis. We try to do weekly. In your report, trying to save some paper, so you'll see links. So if it happens to have a line underneath that report, it is a direct link. Rather than giving you an appendices with the district improvement plan, that's how I've decided to do it. Rather than giving you five or six appendices, now it's just a link because it's on a public website. Okay?
Questions? Yes, Mark.
So not on the policy, but you know the little boxes are handy.
Yes.
Being online and being a PDF, we're unable to type anything into it.
Right. Unless you have Adobe Writer, which we're too poor to have. So
that would be
we'll
the
have
only
to figure that
form,
out.
Format.
Okay.
Change, yeah.
Right. Good. Well, thank you.
Can you make a note of that?
Downloaded as a PDF. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so I tried downloading just in case, but it downloads as a PDF.
PDF. That's a technical question above my skill level.
You could make a recommendation that the district buy us all Adobe Writer for our laptop.
Well, I'm sure somebody can solve that problem for us.
Any other questions or comments, either on the format or on this report?
Again, more on the mechanics of it, just because I've been involved with it. So, as a reminder to all of us, what will happen when this is working well is we will have read this and been able to fill it in and come to the meeting prepared. That's how ideally that's where we'll get.
Hopefully,
from if I understand correctly.
Yeah. So hopefully as you went through it in your head you checked off the yeses and you made note of the noes so that we can go back and remember that in the end we want to have this as a notation for this report. So that when it comes time to do superintendent evaluation, we will have already done the work for it, because we will have evaluated whether the superintendent has reported value or interpreted and evaluated and presented proof of following our policies. So that'll be done. At the end of the year, it'll be add them all up, send her back. Are you all following this process? Yeah. Well, maybe June.
Okay, so the next one is employment compensation and benefits. And I'm going to ask Ms. Shelley to come up and do that. I'll bring it up on the board, shall we?
Madam Chair, just while they're getting ready, we didn't notice and we're making switches, but the policy is labeled right, but I notice on our agenda it's ER3, and that's we're just working with a number of different numbers.
Right, yeah, right, yeah.
But just...
As we go through the...
And I didn't notice.
So thank you very much for the opportunity to bring forward a report this evening on employment compensation and benefits. And I just want to say that this is part of the superintendent's responsibility to report to you that she is following all the collective agreements, acts, and regulations with regard to these items. We have a large district in that we have just around 3,000 persons employed in doing the work that's required for providing education in our system. And that as a comparison for that, the number of permanent staff in Part 1 of government departments is just over 8,000. So we're very large. We're second largest in the district as far as number of employees. We look after administrating six sets of collective agreements or employment policies that include the New Brunswick Teachers Federation, two QP unions, Locals 1253 and 2745. We have the New Brunswick Union of Public and Private Employees, which is our professional support group, and the Public Service Alliance of Canada, which is our school business officials group, and we have the management and non-union policies and wage scales that are applicable for Parts 1 and Part 2 of government. Benefits can include such things as benefits that are included in the collective agreements, like sick leave, maternity leave, vacation, and various allowances. And they're all managed in accordance with eligibility identified with the Pensions and Insured Benefits branch of Treasury Board. An interesting program that we had started back in 2015 was the In Confidence, or the EFAP program, that's provided for all Part 2 employees. And that service provides for free 24/7, 365 day counseling for or services provided for employees and their families. And it's not only a counseling service, but a service that provides assistance to employees on any number of issues. If you go on their website, you're able to see that they can provide elder care solutions for different things. There's articles for professional development that are workplace oriented or personal oriented. Where's the best place to take my dog for grooming? There's just all kinds of supports and resources there for them on a myriad of topics that are personal and work-related, so it's a very good service that's provided there. In Education Every Day Counts is an initiative that started in November of 2015 and saw that case management support services being provided through Manulife. So this was initiated to help get a handle on sick leave, usage by employees, and making sure that they're properly supported in the situations that are going on in their lives that's requiring the use of sick leave. So I think it's at 10 days of sick leave usage, either consecutive or periodically through the year, that they can be referred for Manulife case management, and they provide services to the employees to help them through those things. Any disagreements that come up in relation to how the employer and the employees disagree on things is covered through grievance procedures and the collective agreements. We have very good working relationships with our union groups and very pleased with that. Right now we have four matters that are before adjudication. There was a mistake on the presentation. We actually have three dates. One that was held April the 11th. We have one coming up on May 3rd and one on June the 19th. We have casual and replacement people for some of our employee groups. So we got around 1,000, just shy of 1,100 of those. And that we're very dependent on that casual group of employees, because in our reality and the education field, that if a person in a school or on a bus or is not able to be in the classroom, then they need to be replaced and covered. So it's a little bit different than other workplaces in that regard, where you need to have pretty much one-to-one replacement for those types of things. You can read through the report itself, but it was, we started with an automated online training for new employees that started this year, whereby they can do a review of policy type things and occupational health and safety type things that are consistent across the district. They can go online and receive that training and print off the certificate that they have done that. So very similar to what's required for the Policy 701 training. We have a very large volume of work associated with providing service to a group of employees the size that we have. We're all the time working to find efficient and effective ways for dealing with those things. We've got a good HR team here in this district. We have three HR officers, one in each education center, and we have two here in the office of the superintendent and the director, and we're just work very tirelessly to be able to provide good service for our employees. So I just want to thank you very much, and if you have any questions related to that, then I certainly try to answer them for you.
Questions?
Sure, I think it's great that you guys have a PSAP program. How well promoted is that? Do you know what the utilization rate is?
Utilization rate. I do not have that number rate with me right now. I do know that every training session that's provided, we're all the time talking about the EFAP program. We have had presenters. They also provide workshop presenters to come in and do one-hour sessions on various topics like time management and stress management and those type of things. So those, the individual schools are able to reach out to that service provider and have those presenters brought into the schools. And I wouldn't know about that, how many times that's been done. I just know that it has been done. And we use the services and promote it, I would say, daily.
Certainly promoted in the wellness reports that Sue sends out. Like, there's always something wellness that points you towards the FAP program, the website.
Comes out every month.
As a member of the public and an employee, I've used the service and it's been very, very helpful.
I'm sorry, I have to ask you again to hold and tell me. It's not a
Are there just one other question? Sorry, I'm looking at Appendix C of your report. So, what is that reflecting the number? Sorry, I'll prefer you say there's four. When I look at that, for that employee relations branch, it shows 471 referrals carried forward, 426. Is that for all of government?
That's for all of government. You'll notice that part one is for government proper. Part two is for all of school district, which would be across the province. And part three would be your hospital boards. That would be the number of grievances province-wide that they would have. Thank you.
Anyone else? Thank you, Shelley.
And thank you, Mark. Why are you asking me? Why are you telling me thank you, Mark?
You didn't ask a question.
The last report we have tonight is asset protection. So Sean's going to give you a very brief. This is a very long report. So
because it's a very long report, I'm not going to read it to you. Basically, this is an annual report that we provide to the council on asset protection, and there's a number of areas that we look at. I have also professional contract as part of this
So basically there's a section for each aspect of our organization, facilities, transportation, human resources is part of this, and a number of factors that we look at that we have processes around them for dealing with them. And facilities, you know, you're familiar with capital improvement, and you can see the other ones there, you know, the fire marshal, our playgrounds, health and safety committees, all that kind of stuff, indoor air quality. Under human resources, you know, policy 701, criminal records checks, those kinds of things for the protection of students, occupational health and safety, part of this. Under financial, we have the different policies that govern how we operate, rentals of buildings, our financial responsibilities policy as well. And under transportation, we have responsibilities in keeping our buses well-maintained and our drivers trained, and they receive refreshers on an annual basis. So I look at this as how, like, the structure and everything that we use is supporting, you know, the infrastructure for education, and our students are our greatest assets. So, and that is asset protection. Do you have any questions?
She's warming man.
I know.
Mark has a question.
So, as far as our assets, when something happens, the province is self-insured.
Correct.
Right, so they replace buildings or
yes.
All that stuff.
Yes.
So libraries. So there was an incident, of course I was aware long before that, and it's always been a concern of mine. So if a sprinkler breaks or a school burns down, all the library books go with it. From what I continue to understand, unless that has changed, most books are purchased with volunteer fundraising. And so the last incident we had, the province doesn't replace those books. Student parents have to go back and fundraise to replace all those. Is that still how that works, or?
There's an allotment of budget dollars that's given every year to schools under the global title of instructional materials, and library resources are part of that budget. So there would be monies there for some of that. I know in the case of if you're talking about Devon, I know that the district provided some funding to help with the repurchase of books there. I believe it was $10,000 that David and I had provided the school towards resources. But as far as the, you know, education providing replacement books as part of asset protection, no, you know, we're not getting that. You know, if there was a, you know, like say for instance, a Nackwick would be a good example. Nackwick High School, where an entire building, like the grade 9 area was damaged, then we had to shut it down, vacate it, the province comes in, and they actually made the repairs to the structure, and the district didn't have to do that. That was part of an emergency repair, part of protecting the overall asset of Nackwick High School.
I guess for me, it's just, and it's not any mismanagement, or it's certainly not yours or Catherine's fault. It's just unfortunate that parents work so hard, and I know they're buying material, and they're bringing it into a self-insured environment. So it does create a loss there. At the same time, I think our buildings are being maintained. I mean, we have that unfortunate, and you know, it's a safe environment. But it's just too bad, you know, provincially. There wasn't something that could be done, because it does create an additional burden on volunteers, because they raise money because they go above and beyond the funding for libraries. So anyway, that's my only concern, which is not necessarily anything you're doing wrong. I think it's the system, and it's unfortunate. So.
Thank you. Any other questions for Sean before it sits down too late? No other questions? Okay, that's
how it's supposed to work. You're supposed to have all your questions done ahead of time, looked after. And I had one, but I'm not going to ask it because I'm embarrassed I didn't ask it earlier. I'll ask later. Not important. Okay. So, thank you. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you,
Catherine.
And thank you, Shelley. Boy, that was a mistake doing that, wasn't it? Committees. So, let's have a report from the newest committee first. The committee on, yes, feel free to...
Bake cakes.
There might be chocolate cake left. We should have said, the students out to have chocolate cake. The
Student Voice Committee.
Thank you.
We had our first meeting. We've just organized ourselves to see which direction we were going and things. We have a second meeting planned for May 10th. And hopefully we'll have a district, someone representing the district office at that time. And we are looking at doing 10th, and then if necessary, a meeting before a meeting on the 24th, and having some kind of report for May the 24th. We really want to make sure that we have something in place to start the new year.
Okay. So did you say 3 o'clock, or what did you have a time on the 10th?
I think we're going to go with 3:30.
Okay, good. Okay. And any questions of Terry on that committee? Do you have a good number? Are you looking for more?
We can always use more, yes. More people on deck, the more ideas there are.
Okay, so just the day before that meeting, send out a reminder to everyone, and then...
Yeah, I will.
Okay. Those people who have bad memories, who they be, might come. And the policy committee...
So tonight's agenda, there's drafts put forward for policy EL 0, 1, 2, and 7. Updates the remaining EL policies and all GPs. I'm expected to bring forward at the May's public DEC meeting. Councillor Heather Hogan has asked to join the DEC policy committee. We actually accepted that offer graciously, and she'll be joining us going forward. And the next policy committee, we're looking to meet at 4:30 on May 10th before our next information session.
Great, thank you. So yes, that's a reminder that even though we're encouraging people to join the Student Voice Committee, if you do, we need to mention it at a meeting so we can get it in the minutes. Thank you. Anyone have any questions of Sean on those policies? We're all waiting for them to be shorter and sweeter, so you don't have as many questions. Okay. We didn't have any reports from the committees that members are serving on, right? Okay. I'll check with you later. Now we're down to the public. And our public commentator is
gone. You left with the other guys, you're really eager to talk.
They left.
If you just waited a few more minutes, you just...
I think he figured he was...
Yeah, he was true.
Dying race.
So, obviously, I'm hoping to see that the Hanwell School stays high on the list. I do see the need, of course, for Leo Hayes, too. My oldest was graduated, now he's in MECC, he was in one of the trades at FHS, and example of service, and in there, they would be people coming over from Leo Hayes. So, it would be nice to see that happen too, especially for such a small amount of money. But I want to see the Hanwell School first, don't get me wrong! So, that's it, really, and I guess I'll see some of you at the DEC Symposium. Tell Sean too, because he said that at the last meeting. I did get in. I asked Carol. She said, "Ask Stacy." I asked Stacy. She said, "Yeah, sure." So,
great.
The only other question I have, I'll talk to Carol about it after meetings.
Okay. Good, thank you. Yes, Matt.
Hey. Matt Sainforth, I'm a PSSE man. Terry's rotation, I guess, I didn't really expect to come to speak today, but as you probably remember, I have trouble holding my tongue.
Matt's a former student of mine.
Yes. My sharp tongue was learned, not in small part from you.
Learned from you. Oh,
gee, this is getting interesting.
Yeah. We don't doubt it.
Tell us more.
I was really moved by what the young men had to say about the trades program. And it's my feeling that boys and young men are, as a group, in crisis. And not in small part because their identities are being attacked. They're leading the pack in a number of areas, and unfortunate areas like suicides and dropouts and listlessness and despair. This is a program that can really reach some of these boys. If you recall, back in the day, as you might think of it, grade 8, grade 9 was a pivotal time where kids would choose to go on into academics or take the off-ramp in the trades. And it's a real disservice to have eliminated that, in my opinion. Not everybody's cut out for academics. And to give them the opportunity to discover something that they can be proud of, that they can do with their hands, that's not exclusively a men and boy issue, because girls are encouraged to go into trades, and the country needs more trades. But this is uniquely an area where we could be reaching kids that we're losing right now. So aside from that issue, I'm a little disappointed the gentleman from EY wasn't able to stick around. I also had the comment that what I didn't see on his report was costs around what would happen to these buildings after they were abandoned or chosen to shut down. There's demolition costs and site remediation costs, and I don't know if those be turned over to the province to handle. That's still a cost to the taxpayer, right? So those don't just go away. I've seen lots of rosy projections like that there's devils in the details. So those are my comments.
I probably shouldn't say any more tonight because I've said lots. Anyone else have anything to add to tonight's discussion? We're not taking home a whole lot in briefcases because it's all online, but we've got a lot of work ahead of us this next month.
And is Leo Hayes still privately owned?
Yes.
Yes. And has the decision been made? I remember we discussed it, but my memory. Are we going to continue to lease it from the private sector, or is the department going to take it over?
No, I think Sean's report was that the contracts have been signed, continuing the lease agreement, but the owner is interested in an expansion. So they're not putting up roadblocks.
So who would pay for the expansion, the owner or with the district?
The district doesn't pay. Department.
I meant the department.
It would be worked out with them.
Ultimately, the department would pay, whether it would be upfront or through
in
a mortgage in the lease.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Those are just things that I was thinking of.
For a while we were given the idea that project was not approved because of that agreement, but
I remember that.
But we've been assured that the owner is open to.
Thank you.
Could we 1.8 for the Leoways High School, right?
1.9. Well, that was a few years ago.
And they just gave how much to TD Bank?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
$1 trillion.
Really? The province did?
Yeah.
Does this province have a $1 trillion?
No.
I mean, the TD Bank has $1 trillion.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Tanya.
So being new to the deck in September, I don't have any knowledge of any of the Leo Hayes, but are they not able to provide a full class at FHS for those students?
There's not enough room.
Not enough room.
Right.
And staffing
or
is
there
is
not
an
enough
issue.
staff to do a class?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, yeah.
But in essence, there's a cap on how many Leo Hayes students can come
so
over.
So you only have so much space to go beyond what. And we have caps for our industrial arts where we don't allow the class to go over 20, just for safety reasons.
There's students at FHS that don't get into those classes as well, right?
I can't answer that with confidence.
Yeah, be careful.
Yeah, I can't answer that with confidence.
Okay.
Yeah.
But that's a good question. I may look into that. Yeah.
When I was there, that was the case. There were,
That was a zillion years ago.
I know it was a zillion years ago.
The meeting's not over, but the school was much, much larger then. And that was when there wasn't a Leo Hayes.
Yes, no, it wasn't.
Yes, you were that old, Terry.
Sorry to tell you.
You are old.
Oh, Terry, I'll take your side.
I second that.
You second that he's old?
Clarification.
Yeah. So our next meeting will be on May the 24th in Woodstock. We will meet here again for a working session on May the 10th.
I move wager.
A second after?
We need a second.
Just be done with it.
Yep.
And don't hesitate to reach out to the superintendent if you have questions about